So quick to choose the path walked by the righteous, so you can go and nest among the weak. The innocent observers will refuse to find the lie within. Renew the disappointment of the meek.
Chapter 4. Chapter warning for some references to a rape of a minor. Styles didn't want to celebrate his birthdays, so Peter hasn't mentioned them for the past 4 years and change. But the day after Styles' 15th, he hands him a fat stack of folders and says, "You're ready. Pick one." The folders hold cases he's collected over the past several years. The murders of werewolves and other supernatural creatures, obviously perpetrated by hunters, where they were never caught. There are 18 of them. He doesn't know who committed the murders, but he's not worried. They'll find out soon enough. He's read through the case files a dozen times each, and he's not at all surprised when Styles slaps one down on the desk and says, "This one." It's a gruesome double murder from a small town in Pennsylvania that had taken place about a year previous. The victims were two werewolves, a mother and daughter. The hunter had broken into the house and laid wait for the pair. The daughter, a 16-year-old girl, had gotten home first, and the hunter had taken her captive and raped her while waiting for the mother. Once she had arrived, he'd killed them both. Peter nods at his choice and says, "Okay, where do you want to start?" "The car," Styles says with confidence. That doesn't surprise Peter either. And it's a sound choice, though his own research has already told him it's a dead end. One of the neighbors had seen the car and even remembered a partial plate number. It's one of the few pieces of solid evidence that the case had. However, Peter's already looked into it and knows that the car had been stolen a few days prior. Styles finds that out quickly enough, but it doesn't deter him. He moves on to ballistics and boot tread patterns, mining every last bit of data from the police reports. Then he takes to the hunter forums. He's already made an impressive database matching screen names to specifics. When they talk about their guns or travel or their spouses, Styles is there, making notes. He's gone back through the last 5 years of archives. Hunters don't brag about specific kills. They're not that stupid. But it's not impossible to link them to specific times and places, or weapons, or vehicles. They're fortunate in that the gun used was a very specific model that the police had been able to identify. Only a few of the hunters have mentioned using it. One of them also posted at one point that he always steals cars to do his job. He's complained about TSA at the Pittsburgh airport, which is where the car was stolen from, before it turned up in a small town where the murder had taken place. "I'm about 95% sure," Styles tells Peter. 95 is good enough for me," Peter says. "How about you, Cricket?" Styles thinks about it for a moment, then nods. "We'll make sure once we're there." "Okay," Peter says, smiling despite himself. "How do you intend to find him, though? I don't suppose we can trace his web activity?" "No, that's the whole point of using the dark web," Styles says. "But I think I can still use the website to identify him by making a post he'll respond to." "If you do that, you'll give yourself away to the other hunters after the fact," Peter says. Styles smirks a little and says, "Only if this was my first post there. But I have 3 screen names on the forums that I've been using for almost a year, posting some questions and complaining about those damn werewolves that are everywhere." "Of course you have," Peter says, laughing. "Okay then, what's your plan?" They debate for a little while. Then Styles makes a post where he states that he's just moved to Western Pennsylvania and he's looking for a good shop to purchase guns and ammunition. 2 hours later, the hunter in question has replied with the one he uses, and an hour after that, Styles and Peter are heading to Pittsburgh. gun shops have good security, but it's mostly to prevent theft. Getting into the building itself is only mildly difficult, and from there it only takes a few minutes to get into their records, to find someone whose purchases matches the guns that their target had talked about. There's a name, Howard Bell, and an address in Rennerdale, Pennsylvania. "Where would you like to start?" Peter asks. "Oh, you know," Stiles says. "Everywhere?" They head to a coffee shop with free Wi-Fi, and Stiles proceeds to pull up every fact available about their target. He finds out his date of birth, blood type, family members, credit score. Stiles seems relieved that Bell is unmarried and has no children. He lives alone. His house was purchased 5 years previous. And Stiles gets the internet to cough up blueprints. He has the make and model of his home security, as well as the activation logs that show Bell turns it on when he goes to bed, not when he gets home. "Makes sense," Stiles says, chewing on a pen while he works. "It's one of those kinds that's sensitive to movement inside the house, so every time he dropped something or went up the stairs too loudly, it'd go off." After some discussion and a little trial and error, they decide they won't be able to get past the security system without a lot of trouble. With that in mind, they start surveillance. Peter is still better at this, and probably always will be due to his enhanced senses. While Stiles hangs back, Peter is able to get an earful of the hunter's conversations without being seen. "So, he's got this front as a PI," Stiles says, shuffling through papers. "Maybe we could pretend to have a case? Get him to let us in?" "That would produce records," Peter points out. "We don't want records." "True," Stiles is frowning. "He also goes to that bar, like, 3 times a week. If I hid in the trunk of his car, I could get into his garage." "The idea has merit." After a little more debate, they agree. They pop the trunk using a screwdriver and Stiles climbs in. About an hour later, Bell comes out of the car and drives home. Stiles lets Peter into the garage through a side door and they proceed into the house together. But Peter stays behind him. "This isn't his show," he's told Stiles. It's easy to slip into the house. Bell has settled in front of the television with another beer and a football game with the volume up high. He sees Stiles and the reflection on the screen and jerks to his feet, but it's too late. Stiles jams the stun gun into his shoulder and pulls the trigger, and Bell falls to the floor, convulsing. Peter hauls him over to a chair in the kitchen and lets Stiles tie him up, although he supervises closely. They've practiced his knot work diligently. When Bell is secured and Peter has double-checked to make sure all the shades are drawn, they wave a capful of ammonia under his nose. He comes to with a shout. "Who the fuck are you?" he demands, as he focuses on Peter and Stiles. Stiles ignores the question and puts down the news article about the two people who had been murdered. "Recognize them?" Color drains out of the man's face, which is answer enough. "What? How? The fuck are you?" he sputters. "That's irrelevant," Stiles says calmly. "These people, you killed them, didn't you?" Bell's Adam's apple bobs up and down as he swallows. "What? No! You've got me confused with somebody else!"
"Dude," Stiles says, "you have more weapons in your garage than the Michigan militia. There is zero chance you'll convince me that you're not a hunter. I know exactly who you are. Hell, you recommended your gun shop to me not 2 days ago.
"You..." Bell's eyes go wide. He licks his lips nervously. "What do you want?"
"I want your count."
Bell blinks at him, confused. Peter glances over, unsure himself of exactly what Stiles is getting at.
My count?"
"Yeah, I want to know how many people you've killed. I know that these two aren't the only ones, so I want to know how many."
"And if I tell you that, what then?"
"Then I'll take you to the police station where you'll confess your crimes and go to jail."
Bell hesitates, clearly suspicious, but seems to realize that he doesn't have much of a choice. 17. Styles takes out a notepad and a pencil. Names. If you don't have those, dates and locations will do. His matter-of-fact way of interrogating the hunter amuses Peter, although he's mildly annoyed that they're going to be there longer than he planned. He keeps a careful eye out the front window at the passing traffic as Bell describes his crimes. He doesn't know many of the names, but he at least knows the approximate age and gender of his victims, as well as where and when he killed them. When Styles gets to the end of the 17, Peter says, "Are you quite finished?" "Yeah," Styles says, tucking the notepad away. "Then we need to kill him and get out. We've been here too long." "Sorry," Styles says. "What?" Bell blurts out at the same time. "You didn't really think we were going to let you live, did you?" Peter drawls. "Even if our primary goal was justice for your crimes, you've seen our faces. There's no way we can let you go."
But you said..." Bell's face has drained of all color. "Please, you can't."
"Are you going to beg?" Peter asks. He knows that they should just get it over with, but he has to admit that he's enjoying watching him squirm. "I bet the children you raped and murdered begged, but did it stop you?" "No. So why should it stop us?"
He glances over at Styles, who's looking through a rack of knives on the wall.
"See anything you like?"
"This one," Styles says, taking a knife down. They had agreed ahead of time that they would use the hunter's weapons if at all possible. That way nobody would be able to trace the weapon back to them. Peter looks at the knife and nods approval. Bell is struggling violently, but can't manage to slip out of the bonds. He almost tips the chair over, but Peter catches it and rights him. He watches Styles as he walks over. His hands are trembling slightly as he presses the knife into Bell's throat.
"Not there," Peter corrects.
"You'll be in direct path of the blood spray. Come around behind him."
"Jesus, you crazy son of a bitch, you fucking psycho!" Bell says, as Styles obeys Peter's instructions. "You don't have to. I'll turn myself in. I won't say anything to anybody about you, I swear."
Styles stands there for a moment, unmoving, until Peter says, "I can do it this time if you need me to."
Styles shakes his head, but doesn't say anything. He takes a deep breath, then lets it out, closing his eyes for a long moment. Then he thrusts the knife in, jerking it downwards, along the artery the way Peter had taught him. Blood goes everywhere, and Styles flinches back despite his best efforts, letting out a little yelp. Bell's body spasms several times before going still.
"Jesus," Styles says in a thin little whisper. "Do you need to throw up?" Peter asks him.
Styles swallows hard, then shakes his head. Peter takes the knife from him and briefly squeezes his shoulders before heading over to the sink. He washes it thoroughly, using the supplies they had brought, and puts it back in the hunter's belongings. Then he gestures for Styles to follow him. Styles carefully places the copy of the news article they had brought about the murdered women on the table in front of Bell's body. Then they go out the back door and over the fence. They're fortunate in that Bell lived in a house that bordered on the woods. Styles' magic is especially good in a natural setting, and he erases their tracks behind him as they go. They walk over a mile through the dark forest in silence before they come to the things that Peter had set up ahead of time. There's a metal trash can and a can of gasoline. Styles wordlessly strips out of his clothes and puts them into the trash can. He'd worn gloves for obvious reasons, and his clothing had covered all of his skin besides his face. There are a few drops of blood on either side of his neck, but that's all. Peter wipes them away with a makeup removal wipe, then tosses it into the trash as well. He douses it with gasoline and sets it alight, while Styles puts on the new outfit that they had left there for him.
"How are you feeling?" Peter asks him.
Styles' silence is not unexpected, but still concerns him.
"I'm not sure," Styles says. "I guess I'm not feeling much of anything. I expected to feel either bad or good, but I just feel
okay. Like, there's a part of me that feels bad, really bad, kind of sick. But there's also a part of me that feels good, because I was thinking about the girl he killed, how scared she must have been, how much pain she was in. And I know that he'll never be able to make anyone feel that way ever again. So I feel good about that. And the two things are kind of canceling each other out, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does to me, Peter says. Although I'm not sure I should be used as a barometer for this sort of thing.
Stiles glances at him. What about you? How do you feel?
I feel an overwhelming sense of satisfaction, Peter says. It's a very nice feeling.
Stiles seems to consider this for a minute before saying, I guess that's okay, to be satisfied. I don't think you should be happy, but satisfied is okay.
Thank you for your support, little cricket, Peter says, amused.
Once the fire has guttered out, they start walking again. Peter has left their car in a small lot that's deserted this time of night, and he senses no danger as they walk over and get in.
How far are we driving tonight? Stiles asks.
Not too far. I thought we'd head up to Cleveland. I've reserved us an Airbnb. Self-check-in, so it won't matter that it's the middle of the night. We'll stay there tonight and then leave tomorrow. Cal in Chicago has new identities waiting for us, but we need to go pick them up.
Okay.
This, Stiles is used to. Sometimes Peter's contacts will mail them packets with their new identifications, but sometimes they go and pick them up. He yawns, then looks surprised at himself.
The adrenaline is wearing off, Peter tells him. You're probably feeling a little shaky, right? Drink some of the tea I left for you. It'll help you get some sleep on the drive.
Stiles nods and pops the top of the travel cup. He's asleep after three swallows, and Peter has to take the cup out of his hands before he drops it. The first thing Stiles does the next morning is check the news from Pittsburgh. There's nothing on it.
It could be days or even weeks before his body is found, Peter reminds him. Bell had no local family, no 9-to-5 job. Nobody is going to notice that he's gone right away.
Yeah, I guess, Stiles says. Peter has a feeling that there's a problem here that they're going to have to address. But he's got a lot to do, so he lets it go. He thoroughly cleans the apartment, just in case anyone could have tracked them there, before they get into the car. They drive from Cleveland to Toledo, where he's arranged to buy a new car. Then they head to Chicago, meet with his contact, who has a thick packet with their next six identities. He hands the man an equally thick stack of cash. Then they're on the road again. They check into another long-term stay hotel in St. Louis. Stiles is already on his new phone, looking at Pennsylvania news. When there's nothing there, he gets out his laptop and looks at the Hunter forums. 2 days later, when Stiles is still constantly refreshing the web pages in question, Peter sits down with him.
What are you doing?
I just want to know when people find out, Stiles says, not looking up from his laptop. I want to know what happens to the murder investigation of the two women. Peter sighs a little.
Stiles, you do know that 90% of that sort of information is never made public, right? They're not going to say anything about the news article being at the murder scene. They hold back as much information as they can, so any suspect they apprehend can be assessed for knowledge of the crime.
Stiles' jaw squares a little. I think it'll be pretty public news when it turns out he was a serial killer.
Maybe. Although, I could point out that they don't know he's a serial killer. Hell, they don't even know that he killed the two women in Pennsylvania. Although, leaving the news article there will certainly point them in that direction. But they won't say anything about it until they can verify it, which they'll do by comparing his DNA to that crime scene. That could take weeks, months. So let's say they do that. Yes, then they'll tell the families of the victims that he was the perpetrator, and that he's dead. There will probably be an article in their local news about how the case was solved, but they won't mention how. It's debatable whether or not they'll tell the families that an obituary left at his murder scene led them to check his DNA. They should know, Stiles protests. They don't need to know, Stiles. All they need to know is that the man who killed their loved ones has been identified and that he's dead. That's the closure they need. But, Stiles, stop, Peter says, so firmly that Stiles does. You've got this image of yourself as the avenging angel, punishing the murderers of the innocent. We're going to nip that in the bud right goddamn now. They're not going to hold parades for you, Stiles. There are people out there who will think you're doing the right thing, and plenty that think you're no better than the people you kill. You have to remember that you're not doing this for them. You can't depend on other people to motivate you. We're doing this to avenge the dead and protect the unidentified, unknowing future victims. Two groups that, by their very nature, will never show you gratitude. Your reasons for doing this have to come from in here. He jabs Stiles in the chest. And never from out there. Stiles lets out a breath, then nods. Okay, yeah. Thanks, Peter. Peter reaches out and rubs a hand over Stiles' hair, the back of his neck. If it helps at all, once the hunter community figures out what we're up to, you'll have all the validation you need, providing that watching them squirm will validate you. Oh, yeah, Stiles says. Absolutely. Okay, but what do we do with the information about the other people Bell killed? Other than file it away so we don't end up duplicating work? Nothing. Stiles' jaw sets. Peter sighs. Okay, he finally says. What did you have in mind?
I learned about this while I was reading about BTK, Stiles says, as he carries the stack of papers into the copy shop. If you copy them several different times on different machines, it gets a lot harder to find evidence of where they came from. As long as you do it somewhere cold, nobody thinks it's weird that you're wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm, Peter says with a sigh. What about when it's not winter?
Stiles shrugs. We can save informing the police for wintertime. Between cases. I'll just keep records until then.
Of course you will.
The papers that Stiles is copying have one sentence on each of them, typed on a computer in Times New Roman. Before I killed him, Howard Bell confessed to the murder of, and then the name of the person or people in question. Several of his kills were families, so there are only 8 letters.
And how, exactly, do you plan to do the envelopes? Peter asks. You can't copy onto those.
Sure you can, Stiles says, popping open the tray on the side of the copy machine. See?
I bow to your superior expertise.
You have to get the ones that seal themselves, though, Stiles adds. And the self-adhesive stamps. There's DNA in saliva.
I know that, infant,
Peter says, amused despite himself. They do their work at several copy shops, then mail the letters one by one as they drive, at random around the Midwest. The next day, there's a post on the forum, the subject of which is Hunter murdered in Pennsylvania. Stiles clicks on it eagerly, while Peter leans over his shoulder. Hunter and forum user Remington Lover 783 murdered in his home outside Pittsburgh. I have police sources who have confirmed the following information. RL 783 was killed sometime between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. on a Thursday night. Difficult to determine more exact time of death as the body was not found for almost 2 weeks. No sign of forced entry. He'd been tied to a chair and his throat was cut in a professional manner. Also had burn marks on his shoulder, probably from a stun gun or taser. Last seen alive, leaving Liberty Tavern alone at 10:30 p.m. No security footage in parking lot,
but his car was found at home in the garage. Scene was very clean forensically. No fingerprints, shoe prints, or fibers. Doubtful any of the blood is the murderer's. RL-783 had no defensive wounds. Murder weapon not yet identified. Police suspect that one of his own knives was used. They found blood residue on several of them and are testing them to see if any of that blood is his. Frankly, I doubt it. Seems more likely that the murderer cleaned their weapon and the blood they found was from previous kills. Most importantly, a news article was found on the kitchen table next to the body detailing the deaths of two women in Pennsylvania about a year ago. Research confirms that these two women were known werewolves. Although it's unknown if RL-783 killed them, it seems likely. There was DNA at the scene of their deaths, and the police are going to match it against his to find out. Obvious conclusion is that a relative or friend of the two women hired a professional to take out RL-783. Anyone with any information is asked to contact the U.S. Hunter Coalition chair. They are offering a $10,000 reward to any info that leads to the murderer. One kill and already a bounty on our heads, Peter says, smirking slightly. Oh, I do like that. They were impressed. They think we're professionals, Stiles says, sounding a little bit odd. We are professionals, Peter tells him. No, we aren't. Professionals get paid. Peter thinks this over. True. I suppose it's less of a profession and more of an avocation. He sees the look on Stiles' face and says, That can be your word of the day. Go look it up. Stiles does so, and then nods with Peter's conclusion. What now? Now we move on to the next case.